Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Okay, the numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales through Diamond to retailers for February 2012. And kind of an interesting month, kind of a really boring month. Looking at the breakdown of the unit sales for the top 300, Marvel had 29.9% of the total units. They did that with 64 new items. 13 reorder items, total of 77 items. So very new item heavy, kind of normal for Marvel. Mm-hmm. DC had 24.35% of the total unit sales for the top 300. They did that with 18 new items, 47 reorder items for a total of 65 items. Again, for DC, you know, they've always been kind of very heavy on that back list. Mm-hmm. And then Image came in pretty strong with a 12.76% of the total unit sales for the top 300, 13 new items, 23 order items for 36 items total. And you add in Dark Horse and IDW, the premier publishers, and that accounts for 77.43% of the unit sales for the month for the top 300. So very, you know, heavy towards the front half of previews, really not a big surprise there. But really, we've got a ton of different publishers that show up on the list. One or two, I think, for the first time, such as Ubi Workshop. But we've got 28 different publishers showing up on the list, 16 of which have under 1% of the total unit sales for the top 300. But, you know, that's just kind of the way the cookie crumbles when you get that many publishers and you've got a couple like Marvel and DC that take such a big percentage of the pie every time. Mm-hmm. Now, what was kind of, frankly, disappointing, we go over to the top trades list itself, and the top item, which was the Batman Gates of Gotham trade paperback, which is, you know, compiling the miniseries, 4,389 units. That is a pretty low high watermark for the list. It's the lowest since the 4,076 units for Serenity Volume 2, Better Days and Other Stories hardcover back in August of 2011. The lowest we've seen goes back really during lowest during the whole Final Order era, starting back in March 2003, was 3,913 units for Jack of Fables Volume 8 trade paperback. So this isn't the lowest we've seen, but really it's only, you know, about 400 or 500 units away from the lowest we've seen. And the four lowest top-selling trades we've seen during the Final Order era have been within the last year. So, you know, lackluster sales. We only have two items over 4,000 units, only another four items between 3,000 and 4,000 units. And, you know, you got to keep in mind that sales, particularly on the trade paperback side, and that's part of what makes it different than the comic side, is these sales figures are as much a reflection of the selection of material as the state of the industry and the economy. You know, there was no new Walking Dead trade paperback or hardcover that came out. There was no new Fables. There was no new of you know, half a dozen other things that almost would have been guaranteed that 5,000 or higher, or really the 4,400 or higher, which is all it would have taken to you know, top the list this time around.
Well, not only that, but, you know, you look at some of these books, and they count as new items, but really it's repackaged material, like the Batman versus Bane trade paperback. There's a new, you know, there's a reorder of, this is a reorder, but Batman Year One. So a lot of Dark Knight Returns is back on this list again. You know, so this is the time, John, I think that, you know, people are, they're heavily into, as far as the DC goes, right? Mm-hmm. They're into the New 52, and DC is kicking out this old material that a lot of people have already read, and it doesn't, you know, that Batman, for example, is not the Batman that we're reading these days. So, you know, that universe is kind of like gone and done with. And,
I mean, on the one hand,
Superman, the Black Ring, you know.
I mean, on the one hand, I completely agree with you. But specifically that Batman Gates of Gotham, that was setting up some of the older, old money families in Gotham City and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those families, some of those characters even, I think, have shown up both in kind of what they're doing with the Court of Owls stuff in the Batman family,
right,
and over in what's going on in All-Star Western with Jonah Hex.
With Jonah Hex, right. Mm-hmm.
So, on the one hand, yeah, it's not the same continuity, but they're trying to have their cake and eat it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get that. And I think some of the lackluster sales on some of this is, yeah, I mean, it's a discontinued continuity. Some people that matters, other people couldn't care less.
Right. Some Green Arrow Salvation is another one, right?
Yeah, but some of the stuff nobody was excited about when it was coming out in monthly format.
Right.
You know, the Gates of Gotham stuff, a lot of people just passed on that because that was material that came out right before Flashpoint, and it was feeling like filler material because by the time it had come out, they had already announced they were going to be doing the reboot, I think.
Right.
So it's neither fish nor fowl. It was almost stillborn material, if you will.
Right.
You know, kind of lame duck stuff.
Right, lame duck, exactly, right.
You know, and that certainly fits for some or quite a bit of this material, particularly on the DC side. But then you look at that number two ranked item, which did 4,059 estimated units, and that's that Fantastic Four Season 1 premiere hardcover. That's all new material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as to what continuity it's in, really, that's anyone's guess these days, I suppose. But that
isn't that more of a kid-friendly title, too?
I've got it. As a matter of fact, I've got it sitting right here in my hands. I was just grabbing that. I haven't actually read it yet, so I can't answer that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the art is beautiful. It's great looking stuff. And it kind of reminds me of some of the it reminds me of some of the Hickman stuff. And looking at the last page or two, it really is a lead in to Hickman's run of Fantastic Four.
Okay.
It seems like a definite, you know, major kind of set the stage and jumping on point, I think. Just, again, having flipped through right as I was talking there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not one of those that's aimed just for kids. If anything, hopefully it's an all-ages sort of a thing. But it definitely seems to be an on-ramp kind of a project.
And I guess I was surprised that they put these out as premier hardcovers and not trade paperbacks, but I guess that'll come in a month or two. You know, they'll turn them around and make trades of them.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said for having done this as low-priced trade paperbacks, like you said. I mean, down
right
to a $9.99 price point. And use this. I would not have called them Season 1. I think that was an unfortunate naming choice. I would have.
So it's not an. Season 1 to me sounds like an origin story to me.
Well, and it is.
Okay.
But then if you ever want to follow up with it, are you going to do a Season 2? Or is this just the only Fantastic Four one you would have?
Yeah.
And Season 1 versus a Year 1, you need something that is, I think, a little more evocative of start here.
Why I really don't like what DC is doing with the Batman and Superman Earth 1. You know, I hate that title.
Yeah, well, it's got multiple problems with it because
yeah.
Earth 1 used to be the core Earth. We're now at Earth 0, which shouldn't be confused with Earth Prime.
Right.
And they've just made this overly complicated. We're about to have another Earth 2 in the comics side of things.
Right.
Which is, I think, the third Earth 2 that we've had. Possibly the fourth. It is the fourth. We had the original Earth 2 with the JSA. We had the JLA Earth 2 hardcover, which had the Crime Syndicate. We had the Earth 2 that showed up in the JSA comic book series, where Power Girl was sort of from but not from. And now, post-Flashpoint, we've got another Earth 2. And, you know, some listeners may be thinking, well, you know, this is just continuity stuff, who cares? Well, on the one hand, great. If you feel that way, more power to you. But these sorts of things make it confusing for readers to figure out where to jump on board, or really what the heck's going on some of these things.
Right.
You know, when they reuse, Earth designations like that, it gets confusing. You know, when somebody says, well, I liked Age of Apocalypse, what are they talking about? Are they talking about the stuff that was collected in the omnibus that showed up down at rank 74, the X-Men Age of Apocalypse omnibus hardcover, 1,159 units? Or are they talking about the Age of Apocalypse comic book that just started up?
Right.
You know, which is very, you know, you could argue it's the same continuity, but, I mean, you know, technically it's not, but it's close enough. Who really cares, you know, I suppose. They're doing things that make it harder for readers to either get on board or to get back into the game, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of why we get to the point where we see lackluster sales.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a little over 40,000 units, or 4,000, excuse me, 4,000 units for this Fantastic Four Season 1. First month of release. I'm not going to say not bad. It's really unimpressive. But this is something potentially that could be an evergreen book for Marvel, given how it leads directly into, it looks like, the Hickman run. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like eventually Hickman's going to get off the book, and maybe they'd want to do another season one launching whoever the next creative team is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is part of why I question the season one designation, because it also implies there should be a season two.
Right, exactly, right.
You know, just since we've started talking about these, you know, collected editions and stuff on the podcast, which, you know, we've been doing for a good couple of years, it used to be that a lot of these things would have Volume 7, Volume 8 designations on them. And we could do, you know, volume-to-volume comparisons. And I still do volume-to-volume comparisons where I can. But Batman Gates of Gotham, what was the previous Batman volume to come out to compare it against?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've gone kind of heavy on the double-dipping with the trade and the hardcover stuff. Two things that I think make that Fantastic Four Season 1 unique, not unique, but interesting sales-wise, original material.
Yeah.
Okay. Normally, original material places a little bit higher. The other thing is there's the free digital copy included, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, for stuff like that, that's something I'll put on the Transformer I've got and, you know, kick back in bed and just kind of flip through something. Obviously, that means the stuff is available for sale, you know, just strictly digitally as well, and I'm curious how that's doing. But we're getting into the point where the print sales, you know, in this case, it's $25, $24.99, but $25 book. You know, it probably paid for the cost of content creation, no question asked. But I'm not seeing the print side of things, either in the periodical format or the collected edition, really on the upswing for the most part. I don't know how much revenue's coming in from the digital side, and it really comes down to where is the revenue stream going forward coming from, and is it going to keep generating new content? You know, Marvel made the announcement at South by Southwest here in Austin that they're going to be releasing, or they're going to be doing the free digital copy with all of their $3.99 comic books. Now, that's very relevant to the discussions you and I have every month, Chris, because we're getting to the point where they've done enough, both DC and Marvel, of the digital versions of these comics that it may start impacting the collected edition sales for people who just want the story. You know, if you could be getting the last couple issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate X-Men, or whatever, digitally, you don't need to go get the trade. So will we see a downturn, you know, that corresponds to that or not? I really don't know. And it's going to be very interesting to find out. But, you know, I see a month like this where, you know, again, only six items above 3,000 units. You know, we get below 2,000 units before we're out of the top 20. So that means the majority of these items, your average store did not get a... Not every store got a copy, just statistically speaking. It's guaranteed. Now, granted, for some of these, most stores probably shouldn't have bothered. A couple others of these I'm a little surprised by. You know, Superman the Black Ring, I thought that was pretty good. Punisher by Greg Rucka, Daredevil Reborn. There are a few in that area there that, you know, do I expect it to fly off the store shelves? No. But like that Daredevil Reborn, I would think most stores might want to have a copy of that since Daredevil's doing okay these days. You know, it's a very interesting time to be watching the sales. I mean, it's, you know, better.
The Daredevil Reborn was not a good series. The new stuff from Rucka or from Wade is good though.
Mm-hmm. But that's what led into it.
I think the Reborn trade did get a bounce from all the publicity and the greatness, quote unquote, that everybody is touting with the new Daredevil run.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't. I read Reborn, and I don't think it's that great of a book.
I'm liking what Wade's doing on Daredevil, but I'm not loving it.
You know what? Me too. I mean, I think Wade is just. It's good. Is it the greatest Daredevil I've ever read? No. It's. But I mean, it's winning all these like accolades, and you know, from Miro, this is such great stuff. It's like, all right, it might be. You know, I mean, whatever. You know, I think there's some better stuff out there right now.
Well, Wade is going to be, I think, a very important guy to watch over the next 6 to 12 months.
Well, we can get into that if you want to,
because he seems to be planning to go whole hog digital.
Yeah,
and the whole concept of Mark Wade Unleashed just excites me. I mean, when the guy is on his A game, and usually he's not far off that. You know, at worst, he's written some amazing stuff. You know, everything from Kingdom Come to Empire to, you know, some of the stuff he's done over at Boom with Irredeemable and Corruptible.
Well, and you and I love that.
Yeah.
I think what he did with Irredeemable is better than what he's doing on Daredevil.
Yeah, but then
some people might completely disagree with me, but I think it's more
totally
fun.
But you look also at Unknown, at...
Yeah.
Potter's Field, some of the stuff he did over on Ruse. I mean, the guy has covered the gambit. His colossal run on The Flash, that was a defining, you know, multi-year run for the Wally West character. The guy has been around the block. He knows exactly what he's doing. And if you know, he's in the driver's seat, you know, business-wise, creatively, etc., on digital stuff, that could be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that works out or not, don't know. You know, on the one hand, I hope it does. I love what he, you know, his writing and stuff. On the other hand, you know, I'm an old guy who likes the print stuff. A little bit of a Luddite in that respect, I guess.
Well, and we're both old guys, as in we grew up with Mark Wade. Yeah. Ever since I've been reading comics, there's been Mark Wade. You know what I mean?
He's a little bit older than we are, but not a whole lot.
No, well,
but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, Wally is my Flash. You know what I mean? And I grew up with Wally.
Okay. I was going to say, I grew up on the Barry Allen stuff, okay, and then got used to Wally.
Yeah. Well, you're not much older than me, though.
No, but just, I mean, enough that I would not consider Wally my Flash.
Okay.
I grew to love him, and great character, particularly yeah. Wade's run on it. But it's funny.
I mean,
I
really didn't start reading comics until that pivotal year of 1985. Yeah, I've read, you know, Miller's Daredevil run when it was coming out in 81 or 82 mm-hmm. or 83 or whatever it was. But, you know, but that was more Marvel. I was always into more Marvel. And then when Crisis happened, you know, not to bore you with my comic history, but that I'm like, oh, what's going on with Batman these days? Other than like the Super Friends that was on Saturday morning.
Well, you know it's funny because just a couple of years can make a bit of a difference, and I think that is very germane to the numbers.
Yeah.
Because we look right now, And for the last 6 months, DC has been on a definite resurgence growth curve. I mean, they've been doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what people are talking about for the most part. However, you roll back 3-4 years, who are they talking? Marvel was the number one publisher by a wide margin. So people, you know, getting into comics a few years ago, and I almost want to say theoretically, because the cynic in me questions how many people are getting into comics over the last 5-10 years based on these sales numbers, but, you know, people who are coming in now, I would think, would more likely gravitate towards DC,
mm-hmm.
and the average person a couple of years back would have been more likely to gravitate towards Marvel,
mm-hmm.
just because of who's on kind of their A-game creatively as a company. And people could argue DC's not doing great creatively, yada, yada. And fine, I'm not even going to debate whether they are or are not, but sales-wise, when I see their top book selling 135,000 copies and Marvel's top comic selling under 60,000.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta think right now the you know, the safe bet is DC right now.
Well, DC is on a roll, you know, and you can argue that there's too many titles, but I think, you know, Didio is, and Jim Lee and those guys and Johns, I think they're doing a good job of saying, okay, what's working, what's not working, let's give it the 7-issue treatment and then pull it. You know, that kind of thing. They're watching it with a close eye. I was going to say, these titles go on forever.
That's exactly what they're doing, is they're keeping a very close eye on this stuff, and I think that's a very smart move.
If there's one thing, I mean, I'm reading all the Batman books, you know, and if there's one thing that I would get rid of, I'd get rid of Dark Knight. I think that's just one too many Batman solo books. You know, Batman, Detective, and Dark Knight. Get rid of Dark Knight.
I was talking with a friend last night. He had read all 52 of the number ones, which kind of surprised me, actually. He's not a huge superhero fan.
I didn't
by
even
and
read
large.
Them all.
And the question I had for him is, because I've got a coworker who was asking, you know, which comics he should be getting into or whatever. And, you know, I'm reading all of the new 52. I was having a hard time, just off the top of my head, kind of placing which story was happening in Batman versus Batman and Robin versus The Dark Knight versus Detective.
Yeah.
Because, and the guy I was talking to last night, my friend there, he was able to, it's like, well, this one was that, this one was that, this one was that, and he got them all right. But while you could place which story was happening in each, could you tell me how the titles are positioned differently between the different Batman titles?
Yeah, I can.
Or even between Action Comics and Superman.
Well, yeah, that you can, because there's a definite time difference.
Is that always going to be the case?
No, it's not going to be the case. No.
Because it used to be that at one point, Action was the Superman team-up book, you know, and Superman was just Superman, the superheroic guy. Man of Steel was more the man aspect of him. You know, and they were positioned to tell slightly different kinds of stories with the same character. And that kind of positioning is something I am not seeing at Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of these other publishers, to a degree, have it easier because they're not doing half a dozen or a dozen titles around the same basic concept. Usagi Yojimbo, the anthropomorphic rabbit ninja, you know, or samurai, actually, you know, or Ronin, whichever it is, that's a pretty unique concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, positioning that's pretty easy. Even Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles you can position pretty well. Or some of the Star Wars books, it's a little confusing other than which time era they're in.
Yeah, that's how all. It's different. A time era, right? And give credit to Star Wars, because, I mean, I read all those things. And right in the front fold, right there, they tell you where it is and what's going on in the story. Which, with Star Wars, I think you need that, because the universe is so vast.
True, but wouldn't you think that somebody would be interested in Star Wars as an action-adventure thing versus a space opera versus a...
The politics of it.
The
now.
Politics of it. So wouldn't it make sense to have positioned each title where it was clear if this is the part of Star Wars you like, you should go to this title. If this is what you like, you should go over there.
Yeah. You can. Yeah, you could break that out. I mean, you could break it out into they've had comedy books with Tag and Blink. They've had the horror titles. I mean, with you know, they've had the mystery titles with the Boba Fett books.
They've had them, and as somebody who's read them, you know that.
You know that, right?
But wouldn't it make sense, and wouldn't it help sales if the publishers provided that on a silver platter to readers and retailers.
Yeah. Oh, I think it behooves them to. Just like in DC right now, you know, with the horror titles in the mainstream, quote unquote, New 52. I mean, you know, what is it?
Animal Man and Swamp Thing.
And the Vampire.
And Justice League Dark.
Justice League Dark, right. No, I mean, what it comes down to with me is the continuity. And that's always going to be the case. I mean, and I mean, at least in Marvel, you know that, okay, I know Namor is an X-Man right now, and he's over in California. And yeah, at the same time, he's in the New Defenders book. You know, it's like, eh, what's going on? But you just got to run with it, especially with Wolverine. I mean, I'm over the whole where the hell is Wolverine kind of thing. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm just over it.
But, I mean, it's one thing for a character to be oversaturated and on too many teams. It's another thing, though, to not really be able to explain to somebody the difference between X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Astonishing X-Men, X-Men Legacy, and Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we've got...
Well, and don't forget he's in the miniseries Alpha and Omega right now.
That, too.
Which is a pretty fun book. Which,
yeah, I'm actually liking that one quite a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. But no, with DC continuity, and this is, I'm preaching to the choir when I say this, you've got Action, which has got, you know, the 19-year-old Superman who just put on the blue suit, and then you've got Justice League of America, which, you know, they've been around, they just teamed up for the first time, but yet Superman has been wearing the blue suit. And then you've got Justice League, what is it, International. You know, they've been around for a while. And then you've got, like, Animal Man. And Buddy has been saying, yeah, he quit the Justice League about a year ago. You know? So it's like, okay, so how long was he in the Justice League? And how long was the Justice League, before he became a member of the Justice League? You know,
I have less of an issue with that than Superman in the costume 5 years ago having just gotten it, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Superman we see in the first arc of Justice League versus what we're seeing in Action Comics, that doesn't jive.
Right.
And if that's confusing in the monthly books, by the time this stuff gets collected and you've lost the publishing timeline aspect, you know, what came out when, I think that gets even more confusing.
Right. Well, and same with the Batman books. You know, we're at the point where right now where you've got, you know, when are these books taking place? You know, we really don't know. But, I mean, I know we're way off topic, but, you know, that's part of it. But,
it's relevant in so much as if these are the questions we have, somebody at a bookstore or a comic book store looking at a whole rack of Batman books, they could be pulling stuff out of the New 52 continuity, not quite yet, but almost, the Crisis on Infinite Earths to Flashpoint continuity, or the pre-Crisis continuity, or even the Golden Age stuff. And within each of those different, you know, eras, there's some pretty wildly different takes on Batman.
Yeah. Or Wonder Woman. Just in the solicitations this week, we got the trade paperback for Wonder Woman Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why bother? I mean, really, you know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of what I think they did with Flashpoint and the New 52 reboot is it reminds me of that Mad Magazine fold the back cover kind of a thing.
Yes.
And essentially you're folding from Crisis on Infinite Earths to the New 52 and everything in between just gets swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they want to do that, that's cool. I don't mind the change, but I'm 6 months in. I'm starting to read all the seventh issues and stuff. And I don't feel like I've gotten to know a lot of these characters. And that means when people are getting these on digital downloads, when they start getting in a month or two the trade paperbacks and hardcovers, are they going to come out of that satisfied?
Right. Well, it's funny you mention that, because when I read a book like Resurrection Man, this could have been issue, what, number 27?
Oh, totally.
The old series. You know, you pick it right. I mean, if you are familiar with that character. Now, there are other characters like... you know, Animal Man or Swamp Thing, we're like, you really need a little more background of what's been going on, you know, because it just doesn't jive the way Alan Moore is run, or, you know, there's been a couple different, you
those
know, reboots with
aged
him, you know?
Since then, since their previous titles, But thematically, and even to a certain degree almost visually in some cases, I think both Swamp Thing and Animal Man are enough of a continuation after a hiatus kind of a thing.
Yeah.
For the earlier series.
Yeah.
You know, people who are going nuts and saying, wow, the Red is such a brilliant idea, whatever. It's like, you know, go read the previous Animal Man series.
It was in there. Yeah, for sure.
You know? I mean, to me, the first four issues of the original Animal Man series when he, you know, came back and was no longer lame or whatever, brilliant.
Yeah.
I would put that down as one of the best story arcs I'd read, period.
Was that Morrison's Animal Man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was originally going to be a four-issue miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
It did much better than that and went for, gosh, how long? 80-some-odd, 100-and-some-odd, years. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how all that stuff kind of does when it gets collected. And, you know, we're, again, just a couple of months away from the first wave of those hitting the collected edition side.
Right.
And right now, they would have totally blown away, I would hope, everything we've got on the list here.
Oh, I think so. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, you know, we could be easily seeing in a couple of months a couple of things that are the new 52 Volume 1 stuff, a noticeable gap in terms of unit sales, and then kind of, well, everything else that came out. Obviously, there would be exceptions of Walking Dead, Fables, and a couple other things that usually top the lists.
Well, I'll tell you what, the first one coming out May 1st, Justice League Volume 1 Origin and Animal Man Volume 1 The Hunt, 1 through 6 each.
Should be interesting.
So it should be good, yeah.
Now, it was interesting this time around, we had a lot of high-ticket items. And to me, I'm going with $75 or above as a high-ticket item. We're getting enough things at $50 and stuff, you know, $60, that doesn't quite cut it these days for me. In terms of, you know, more than I'm willing to spend. Those I would at least consider.
You'd like to spend more if you can.
No, actually. I rarely spend. For me, if you look at, you know, when Bob and I are talking about our orders on the preview spotlight, he'll usually get some big ticket items, busts or, you know, trades, hardcovers, whatever. Yeah. If there's anything I've got that's over $4.99, really usually a cover price or whatever, it's rare for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get a couple of trades, like these Season 1 hardcovers or whatever. But I actually got one of these high-ticket items this time around.
Really?
I got that John Romita Amazing Spider-Man Artist Edition.
You did?
Yes, I did.
And how is that?
Amazing.
Is it?
I ordered
a Mazzucchelli one.
That's the Daredevil one, right?
That's the Daredevil one. That's what I grew up on. You know, I'm like, I want that. You know,
and they just announced another one in the latest batch of solicits.
They have two coming up. They've got the Gru.
That was the one I was thinking. Oh, I've got to get the Sergio Aragonés. Yeah,
and they're doing a Jack Davis EC Archives one.
I'll probably pass on that because I'm not into the EC.
Yeah,
but I mean, there was the Wallywood EC Archives that was in February too.
Yes.
So that Romita one sold 1,395 units. It was a bit late. It was expected to come out a couple of days before Christmas, and it came out at the beginning of February. And that Wallywood EC Stories Artist Edition hardcover was supposed to come out a couple of days before Halloween, and came out on the 22nd of February.
They're going to reprint the Wallywood one, too.
Ah, interesting.
You know, they said no second printings, and they said, no, we're going to do a second printing of Wallywood. So, you know, whether or not they're going to go back and do the Dave Stevens one, or
if they do, let me know. That one I want.
Yeah, you know, you'd think they might eventually.
They should.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, I mean, not to get too off topic, but, you know, when I see, like, Walking Dead, when Kirkman does that giant omnibus, no, we're never going to reprint it. Well, you know what? A TV show is coming on. Okay, let's reprint it. You know what I mean? It's like eventually you could probably find it, you know?
Well, it's one of those things that for some of the stuff, particularly these artist edition, I mean, IDW is doing a great job on these. They're first off, they're huge. But the reproduction quality on them, it's like having a couple of issues worth of original art. I mean, and for $75, getting, what was it, six issues in there? Of the Spider-Man stuff. you're not even going to get a single page of that stuff for $75, much less the equivalent of, you know, multiple issues worth. And I'm enough of a process. Well,
then you got to find them at a convention and have them sign the book.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Bob got the signed version, I think, at WonderCon for the Romita one. But, I mean, that's just cool stuff. So the fact they had two coming out in February, granted they were supposed to come out in October and December respectively, was a little surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of Marvel omnibuses that came out. The Avengers Omnibus Volume 1 with John Romita Jr. It was a $100 one that was actually the highest selling of the big ticket items in rank 44 with 1,437 units. Then there was the X-Men Age of Apocalypse Omnibus hardcover, $125, so kind of a big, really the most expensive item on the list.
That's expensive for that, I think. You know, I figured that would be, you know, 99, but 120, that's a lot of money.
Well, it was a pretty big one, wasn't it? Because how many pages was that?
I could look that up real quick.
Oops, hang on, I've got the solicit here. It's just a lengthy solicit. 1,072 pages. So, I mean, you're getting a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also the John Carter Warlord of Mars omnibus hardcover and stuff for.
Did you get that?
No, I didn't. I'm not really a huge Warlord of Mars fan. I got the early stuff that Dynamite did, but that was my initial exposure to the material, frankly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say it did 759 units. So
the only reason I ask if you got that is because I have tweeted this out and I have yet to get a response. So if anybody knows the way this book is laid out, because there are the issues. I think there's like 23 issues or something like that, and then there are the three annuals. And I want to know where are the placement of the annuals, because I think they're just short stories. And I don't know. I don't know if they put these in the did the run and then did the three annuals in the back of the book
or chronologically where the stories
or chronologically would flow. Yeah, but if they did it chronologically, then it breaks up the story.
How do they tend to do that when they do like showcases or essentials and stuff like that?
It's all chronologically.
All right. That makes sense, because you almost need to do that.
Right.
At one point, I plowed through the entire run of the Warlord series, the original Grell stuff, and realized a little ways into it I didn't have the annuals, so I had to go order those so I would have them when I hit those points in the reading.
Yeah.
But sometimes figuring where the annuals kind of slot into the thing is a little bit of a challenge.
Right. Same with, like, Star Wars, too. Mm-hmm. The Star Wars annuals are in different time frames. You know, they've got, like, what, three stories and an annual, and the three annuals in Star Wars all take place in different time periods. So, those don't really fit in either. So, yeah, just that's annuals for you, you know?
Yeah.
Some are flashback. I remember a couple of Spider-Man books were flashbacks, like his year one stuff.
Yeah. They did a whole 1 year of annuals that way.
Yeah.
There are other years they would take a family or have, you know, a random selection of titles and have them cross over or whatever. Or the Atlantis attacks or whatever, the themed kind of annuals.
Oh, the themes, sure, yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Those are fun. I mean, that's a good way to do a crossover is with the annuals, I think. That's kind of fun.
Actually, I think that's a much better way than doing it in the monthly book.
Right, exactly.
Because people already kind of feel that the annuals are kind of continuity, but a little off to the side.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to get as up in arms, if it's a, hey, read these three annuals, or don't.
Well, and they're always, like, more or less 64 pages, for back then it was, $3.99, if that. And, and then they could go into another book or whatever.
Well, DC's starting to solicit some annuals and stuff, and some of those, the pricing is a little odd. Some, they're a dollar more than the title, some, they're $2 more, some, they're the same cost, I think. Or maybe I was just misreading stuff, but
The Ravagers are going to kick off through the annuals too for the Teen Titans spinoff. Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that title. That one looks like fun.
I read Teen Titans and I read Superboy, but I don't know if I'm going to get the Ravagers. I'll pick up the annual and check it out.
Are you liking Superboy?
I really like Superboy.
Then gut feeling is I think you should at least check out the first issue or two.
Yeah, I probably will. Yeah.
Now, one thing that kind of confused me, and maybe you can explain this, maybe you can't, but going through the list this time, I hit item 89 from Dark Horse, Avatar The Last Airbender, Volume 1, Promise, Part 1, trade paperback, reorder activity, 1,031 units, been on the list about four times before. Okay, so far, so good. But then I got down to 267, rank 267. I hit Avatar The Last Airbender, Volume 1, Lost Adventures trade paperback, which had also been on the list about four times before with 372 units. Why does Dark Horse want to have two Avatar The Last Airbender trade paperbacks Volume 1?
Well, one's a lost adventure and one isn't, right?
I guess. That sort of thing just drives me nuts.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
That's stuff, though, that with the Legend of Korra series getting to where it's ready to come out on Nickelodeon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some renewed interest in that. But that was a great cartoon series when it was out. And I did not pick these up. I may do that at some point.
I wonder if that's just a bad oversight by one of the editors there.
Don't know.
Maybe there's going to be a volume two of The Lost Adventures or something like that.
Well, certainly that Promise Part 1 implies a Part 2.
We've touched on that, right, exactly. So,
you know, make this stuff a little easier for people to kind of follow along with. Let's see. Bottom of the list this time around, 337 units. Not too unusual. I did some looking at how the top of the list had been going historically and how the bottom of the list had been going historically. And both kind of bounce up and down a lot. Obviously the top more so than the bottom of the list. But even the bottom of the list is starting to show a little bit of a downward trend.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it's a noisy kind of, spikes and then, valleys and stuff like that. But it seems to me that part of this is they need to perhaps not release everything in trade.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff I think is great to be doing that. Down here we've got some reorder activity on Atomic Robo down at rank 292. It did 350 units of reorder activity. That's something I think is awesome. Both the material and the fact that it keeps, staying out there and available. And that's, just a little above the Marvel Masterwork Amazing Spider-Man Volume 11 reorder activity. So there's a lot of stuff down at this end that, just a little bit of sales, a couple hundred units every month, and that does add up. But, we also get some new material down in this, range every so often, and it's like, wow, was that really worth coming out with?
Right.
Trying to see if there's a really good example of that down here this time around. Filter out the reorder activity because, a lot of people think, well, sure, it's not doing too well on the monthly side, but it's making up for it in trade. And a lot of times, no, it's not. One that was surprising how it did was the Phoenix Without Ashes trade paperback from IDW. This was a Harlan Ellison story. I thought it was great.
Really?
But it only did 446 units.
Is it a new Harlan Ellison or is it an old one?
New, I think.
Really?
It was a four-issue miniseries a little while back. I'm not sure if it was original at that point or not, to be honest.
Like one of his older stories getting remade?
Could be. The solicitation says he returns to his roots with the graphic novel Phoenix Without Ashes. So, I don't know. You'd have to be more of a Harlan
Ellison. I couldn't
even
tell you the last Harlan Ellison thing I read.
Yeah. Guy knows what he's doing.
Oh, he's good. There's no doubt about it,
He's the kind of guy I would love to see doing, not necessarily comics on a monthly basis, but something to where he just comes out with something, a couple of times a year, a couple of one-shots, or whatever.
Well, he's getting up there. I mean, he's not exactly a spring chicken these days.
True, true.
Yeah.
But he'd be writing it, not drawing it. That's a
little
easier.
But you know what else he could do? He could oversee so much of his material in graphic novel form.
Or if, new material, you know.
Or new, yeah, or new material, right, yeah.
He's the kind of guy that you put him as, I wouldn't say, you know, editor-in-chief or anything, but, you know, chief creative officer to a degree. Somebody who would just push people to put out some really damn good stuff. He seems like the kind of guy that could really, you know, light a fire under some people, both creatively and get the crap out, you know, on time aspect, too. That could do the industry a lot of good. You know, challenging people to just do better.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you say this book, who this book came out with? IDW?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. It seems like a good outlet for him.
Yeah.
No.
IDW is doing really well these days, because on the monthly side, I mean, in February, they came in third. You know?
Well, I glanced at their solicitations for June. They've got a ton of books coming out. I mean, just a ton of new material.
Yeah. You know?
So, they are poised and ready to take off. And we've been watching them for a good 2 years now, but...
Yeah.
You know, they're really
kind of thing that it really justifies the decision Diamond made to put them in the front half of previews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a player and they're doing a good job. You know, I still think Dynamite and Boom have that potential. Boom a little less so these days.
Well, Dynamite a little less so these days. I don't know what's up with them. You know, but
yeah, I think part of it is, and it makes sense why they do it. They're milking the properties too soon, too quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you've got a license for a set amount of time, I get why you do that. And Bob and I talked about that some on the comics episode.
Is that why they put out, you know, six different Green Hornet titles, and now that the movie's gone, the titles seem to be gone?
But they're down to the one, yeah.
Yeah, so...
You know, what is interesting to me is with the Kirby Genesis stuff, you went through the latest solicitations, right?
Yes.
Did you see any of them in there?
I thought I saw
not.
One, didn't I?
I could be wrong, but I didn't think they were in there.
Oh, maybe not, yeah.
So, you know, that sort of reminds me of what they did with Project Superpowers of, well, if one's good, let's do four or five. And, you know, it's like putting out an oil derrick fire, you know, you blow it up, you get more fire there, and it extinguishes the flame, essentially.
Well, they're supposed to be bringing that back out. It's just, you know, who knows when.
The Project Superpowers?
Yeah, or, it's supposed to come back.
I certainly hope so. I enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it. That was great stuff.
But
in fact, I've got all
hiatus.
Those comics. I might get all those comics bound into one volume.
I can see that.
Break a two-volume set, yeah.
Definitely good stuff, but
mm-hmm.
You got to keep up some story momentum and whatnot. And mm-hmm. They might have been better off, you know, going kind of slow and steady on stuff versus, okay, one's good, let's do three or four. And mm-hmm. We've talked about this before, and we'll no doubt talk about it again. I think that's... I don't want to say the Achilles heel, but certainly the aspect of Dynamite's publishing strategy that's so easy to kind of poke holes at. And it's not unique to them. Again, you look at IDW with how many Transformer and G.I. Joe titles they're doing. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's, again, you're paying for a license, not knowing how the deal is structured. I would think you're paying X amount for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But there seems to be a strip mining aspect to that kind of publishing philosophy at times that I think is detrimental in the long term. And something that I think really the people licensing the properties should say, hey, don't do that. Or make mm-hmm. it not worth their while to do that. If I held a license and it was going to get, you know, thrown out to a comic company, I would want to structure the deal that it behooves the company to keep the license for a long time and to keep it healthy for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not drain it dry as soon as they can.
Mm-hmm. What about overseeing creative?
Oh, certainly. I mean, to me, that's a given. The challenge there is doing it to where not only do you have oversight on it, but it's done in a easy and timely manner to where there's really no surprises on either side.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems I've heard on some license deals was the turnaround time it took to get stuff approved was horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would approve a storyline and then a couple of issues in, say, you know, no, you can't do that anymore. Kill it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that sucks.
Right.
But, you know, it should be pretty clear up front what the expectations are on what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and the basic, you know, gist of the title. To me, the most mishandled licensed property in comics over recent years, and maybe not recent, is the right term, was the Wildstorm Thundercats stuff. They took a kid's cartoon property.
Oh, sure. The Thundercats. Yeah.
Oh, man. Some of the stuff they did with that, they were kind of circumspect about it. In other words, it wasn't just flat out in your face or whatever. But they made that a more mature book than it had any right or need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's disrespectful of the material and just a foolish, foolish business move.
Mm-hmm. Because, well, look what happened to it, right.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, a parent is going to see that at a grocery store or whatever, or at a bookstore. It's, oh, Thundercats, my kid likes that. You know, it's giving that. And it, nah, come on.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes down to, do you understand what the property is and what its target audience really is?
Right.
And you can write stuff that's suitable for all ages that older people will enjoy, yet still keep it accessible and appropriate for younger readers. You know, I think, again, Avatar The Last Airbender, that's something that somebody of any age should be able to read and enjoy.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't need to be written up or down or left, right, or center to any particular audience. Obviously, that's not the same for all properties.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and you would think that, you know, a Green Lantern or something like that would be more kid-friendly, but not these days. I mean, there's a lot of sex in there. So.
Sex, profanity, graphic violence.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things, and maybe it's just I'm noticing them more in the New 52, but that I'm seeing in a lot of comics that, you know, if these were the comics I was hitting instead of the ones I hit back when I first started reading as a kid, I don't know that I would have gotten hooked on comics.
Yeah.
There are certain things that just would have pushed the wrong buttons for me and would have totally turned me off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus the fact that these stories aren't, you know, complete enough in single issues.
Right.
You know, and in some cases, not even in the collected edition sense. I really don't know that these stories are being written such that they justify the cost to the consumer for that installment and give them a reason to say, yeah, I want to spend that much or more on the next installment, be it a monthly comic or a trade paperback or a hardcover. You know, because some of these things, first volume would be kind of cheap, but then it's, do I want to pay that $9.99 again? Or wait, it's going to be a $14.99 or whatever for that next volume.
Well, and that's what Boom did with the Irredeemable books.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine. I mean, you can still get Volume 1 for Walking Dead for $9.99. I don't think that price has ever gone up.
Well, and nor should it, but
nor should
the
it,
price
right.
on that second volume is that much more.
Right.
And on the one hand, you want to lower the price of that entry issue or volume or, you know, installment, whatever, to get as many people in the door as possible. Because most people are not going to start with the second installment of something.
Well, and you're right. And now that they're up to, like, what, volume 16 or whatever, it's like, why not make the first five trade paperbacks $9.99?
No, actually, what I would do
no?
is I'd keep the pricing the way they is have it, but I would do maybe a comic book size thing, or actually, I'd do a thin square bound thing where it's got a spine and you can actually put an ISBN on it, but that's kind of a recap to where something to where maybe four volumes into The Walking Dead, it's a here's the condensed Cliff Notes version of all of that.
Oh, you could do that, yeah.
To where it's like, you know, I heard it gets good at the second, you know, omnibus or collected compendium or whatever it is. So 48 issues in, I just get a recap of that, and boom, I'm good to go. You know.
Well, I forgot they did do a Walking Dead weekly.
That was just reprints of the original
reprints.
Series.
Yeah, at a cheaper rate though.
But if you had something that basically gave you a thumbnail version, not literally thumbnail, but a quick recap of mm-hmm. here's what's in each trade or whatever, you know, you can get up to speed and then follow the story midstream.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's not a literal recap, something that acts as an on-ramp partway through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Fables is great stuff, but they're up to 16 volumes or more of the trade paperback. There ought to be a couple of places that with a comic book-sized issue, you can get people enough up to speed they can go from there, and if they like it, go back and get the earlier stuff.
Well, I'll give Marvel credit. They have been doing that with the free giveaways with the Marvel Saga books and the Thor Saga.
Exactly.
And Daredevil, which is good. Now, my problem is that, okay, the back of the book, they list all the trades that are available to you to buy, which is fine. But as they are writing the saga, and it tells the story of Thor, right, it doesn't stop and give you that asterisk to tell you, okay, this tale is located in this book. You know what I mean? And this paragraph, which we just recapped, is located in this book. It reads as a biography. It just doesn't tell you where to find that part of his life.
But do you want it to read like it's got legal disclaimers throughout it? You know, how do you handle that to where you get the advantages of the footnotes, both in terms of, oh, that's where that happened, but the publisher gets the advantage with the footnotes because somebody says, oh, that's where it happened. I should go buy that. That sounds like a great story.
Right.
You know?
That's my point, but it doesn't have that. Right.
But you don't want that littering the whole story to where it seems like a hypertext document and you're not getting through it because you keep linking out the other stuff.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a happy medium there, and I think footnotes to a certain degree or something. And it could just be with, you know, some good sidebar kind of, you know, there's a literally a border around that paragraph off on the right or left side and kind of, you know, 90 degrees off running up the side. It says, hey, this is trade whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's something to be said for that. To, you know, bracket off, this all happened here, this all happened there. Because you want to get people up to speed. You don't want to force them to go read that material. But you also want them to go hunt it down and read it if it's something they're going to want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of why we have the sales that we have right now is there's nothing really pointing anyone in particular to Batman Year One or, you know, some of these other trades that we've got, you know, on the list this time around. And some of them are great stuff. Some of them, it's, you know, maybe not so great, but not bad. The marketing department seemed to be so busy and so overwhelmed pushing a selection of what's new now or what's new next, even, that they haven't really generated a self-perpetuating sales cycle to where people can figure out which volume of Green Lantern they want to go read right now, or mm-hmm. Batman or Superman or X-Men or some of these others. Because in theory, you should be able to jump in and out of some of those, you know, go pick up Old Man Logan and then go pick up some of the stuff out of the Wolverine Origins stuff or the original Wolverine miniseries in a collected edition in any order and be fine. But they haven't packaged the marketing material such to really have any good idea of which volumes would interest which readers and why. And part of that is, I think, the solicitation text on a lot of things is ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marvel and DC have both gone to the bullet point kind of solicitation text, and it's teasers, it's you know, tune in next time, you know, same bat time, same bat channel kind of things of how will they escape, how will they get out of this cliffhanger or whatever, versus pitch me the concept of Fantastic Four. Not every month in previews, but is there somewhere on the Marvel site, and maybe there is and I just haven't looked to go find it, that would give me the pitch on this is the Fantastic Four. This is Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four versus Mark Waid's versus, you know, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby. They're not doing a good job of pitching the material and helping us as hardcore readers pitch it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I always struggle with is when somebody, like I've got a coworker doing now, what should I go read? Well, hell, I don't know. I know what I'm reading. I know what I'm liking, what I'm not liking, and why.
Right.
I have no clue what your tastes are going to be. You know, maybe the exact reasons I love something, you're going to despise it or not care.
Right. Like Punisher Max.
Exactly.
Chris, what are you reading these days? Oh, Punisher Max. I just read the latest Punisher Max. Oh, really? You think I like it? No.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you seem to like it. It's like, yeah, but, you know, it's just not for everybody. This book isn't even really for me. You know?
But the question
I'll be damned if my son's going to read this stuff when he's older.
Yeah, I mean? That too.
It's like I read it and then I put it away.
But can somebody articulate who that book is for, who that book is not for, and why?
Yeah.
Such that we can get the industry eventually to the, if you like this, check this out. If you like this because of that, check this out.
If you like Quentin Tarantino, this book's for you. You know, that kind of stuff. You know?
You know, if I like this Fantastic Four Season 1 hardcover I've got sitting here, maybe I should go read the Hickman run. Maybe what's really getting me, though, is the David Marquis or whatever, I forget, I may have mispronounced the name, his art. Maybe that's the part I just love, and I want to go read more of whatever he's drawing. What should I go to next? You know, and maybe in the back of this they actually do some of that. Again, I've you know, only kind of flipped through some of this.
Right.
You know, I don't know. And actually, you know what it is? I think they may have included the first issue of Hickman's run in this.
Oh, that's cool.
I think that's what they did. That's cool. Well, Hickman's still on the book. 3 years from now, is that going to be a good jumping on point for the Fantastic Four? Don't know. Ironically, in one of the upcoming Fantastic Four 0.1 issues, I think it's 605.1, Hickman retells the origin.
Mm-hmm.
I just got the hardcover. Why do they need to retell the origin? You know, they need to be thinking a little bit more longer term, more effectively in the shorter term to facilitate that. And that's how they can get these numbers better. And it's not going to be an overnight process. And it's not something that requires rebooting the entire line of comics either, for either Marvel, DC, or any of the other publishers.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of interesting.
Well, you wonder if Marvel will do a reboot like DC anytime soon.
I'm thinking it's entirely possible.
It is possible, yeah.
You know, depending how X-Men versus Avengers go, and given that neither franchise is selling over 60,000 units through Diamond in February, not a whole lot of reason to think a crossover event between the two of them is going to sell astronomically better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it will. But usually the successful events have been off the foundation of successful franchises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not seeing that now. So if that X-Men versus Avengers event does okay but not brilliantly or doesn't do well at all, Marvel needs to really, regardless, even if it does well, Marvel needs to rethink their game plan.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to get to where they're reliant on events to have top-selling books,
mm-hmm.
they need to rethink their
strategy,
double shipping.
Yeah.
Well, they're double shipping as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you look through the solicitations in almost any recent month for Marvel, and a lot of their books are listed with two issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people are loving the books, that's great, but in a couple of cases, I think it just burns people out faster. You know, I'm getting to where I'm backing out of the Star Wars stuff at Dark Horse, not because I'm not liking it, but because there's, you know, four or five of them and rotating miniseries, and it's, you know, which ones am I getting? Which one?
Oh, there's a lot. Oh, yeah.
It's more trouble to keep up with than it's worth for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not getting the Warlord of Mars stuff because when I went to two or three titles, it's like, you know, I like it, but not that much.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be installing consistent, you know, revenue streams out of my wallet, not trying to drain it dry all at once.
Right.
And in some cases, publishers are doing well. Some cases, they're not.
Well, and kind of that's why I've been kind of liking Punisher. You know, one title, one character, easy to follow. Same with Daredevil. You know, unlike Spider-Man or unlike X-Men or Wolverine. You know, it's just like I can comes, I read it and I put it away. It's great stuff. You know, not much to it.
If I were doing publishing, and we've talked a couple of times in the past about, you know, my philosophies on that kind of stuff. My mandate for the creators would be, your title needs to be self-sufficient. It needs to be strong in and of itself.
Right.
Now, if we want to do something where multiple titles or properties interact, that's cool. But I hate the, you know, Batman's going to go show up in these other books to prop up their sales until Superman can go do it and then Green Lantern or whatever.
Well, and Spider-Man is on everything. Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, he was just in FF or Fantastic Four in space. It's like, oh, my God, you know. Give me a break.
Again, what books is Wolverine not in?
Right.
And it I don't want to say it cheapens him as a character, but it makes the appearance of him less special, you know?
Well, you know who that happened on the villain side was Sabretooth.
Yeah.
He was in X-Men, he was in Wolverine, and he also turned up in Avengers 1959. It's like, enough with this character. Oh, my God.
Well, and part of it depends
one of those characters that when he came along, it's like, ooh, Sabretooth's here. This is going to be good. And now it's like, oh, okay, he's here again, you know?
Venom, same way,
yeah.
But it also depends how they position the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a while, it was looking kind of like they might be oversaturating Norman Osborn. But they've essentially set him up as an evil Nick Fury now.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense for him to be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But then we've got other characters that get oversaturated like that, and then poof, they are just gone.
Mm-hmm.
The Hood over at Marvel is a good example of that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with DC right now, again, they've just rebooted, so you know, a lot of characters are gone. You know, it flabbergasts me how much time and effort they seem to go to in Brightest Day and stuff to establish this new Aqualad. Were over 6 months into the new 52, and he's nowhere to be found except on TV on Young Justice.
Right.
Which, even that's a slightly different
version. That was different, right.
Yeah.
And I like that character.
Oh, yeah. I think
sweet.
I think they missed the boat with the new 52 of not doing a Young Justice series as part of the mainstream DC universe.
Well, I have to figure, I mean, Beast Boy showing up in the Ravagers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to figure that Garth, or you know, whatever you want to call him, has got to be showing up soon in Young Justice.
Garth's already shown up in Young Justice.
He has.
But the Young Justice title they've got's in the kids section, and it's not part of the DC universe, whereas they wouldn't have to make too many changes to that, just kind of fit it into the new Justice League stuff, you know, which arguably they could have just done, you know, and it would have made the cartoon an entry ramp into the mainstream DC universe.
No, I'm talking about the new 52. Yeah. Garth has not shown up yet.
Well, neither is the new Aqualad. You're right. Neither has.
I think it's they ought to get those guys in there pretty soon.
Yeah. You know? I think he's been mentioned.
He was mentioned in Aquaman, but he hasn't been seen yet. Yeah.
I was thinking actually in Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Or was it Red Hood? Okay.
Either way,
he's got to show up.
There are quite a few characters that have just been kicked out into limbo, and a lot of the new Teen Titans are among them.
Yeah.
You know, Garth, Wally.
Donna.
Donna. You know, quite a few.
Mm.
It's going to be exciting to see how the new 52 Volume 1s do in collected stuff, and how some of this other material that landed in the market right before that does in collected editions.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not really seeing anything at Marvel or DC on the collected side that's doing great in February. And again, part of that is just, nothing really great shipped, I guess. But, man, you look at how Marvel is doing on the comics side right now, and, you know, again, 60,000 under that for their top seller. When that gets collected,
mm-hmm.
How's that going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's ironic because I know everything day and date digital on DC, yet they're still having high sales. We're at a very interesting time in the market. A lot of what had been pretty tried and true trends, some of them are getting thrown for a tailspin. Some are staying rock steady. And I think we're very much at the point where the industry is having to make a number of adjustments on, you know, the whole digital market, the whole how do we package things in hardcovers, such as the season ones, the Earth One stuff, and can they get, you know, new readers or re-engage readers? I mean, at least this is looking to be, you know, on the comic side, a much stronger year than 2011 was. I would say, so far on the trade side, no huge cause for alarm. This was obviously an off month. And for February with 5 weeks, that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if we start seeing similar stuff to this month ongoing on the trade side, that's going to be of concern. You know, a little bit off here and there, not a big deal, but if it becomes consistent,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I would not be surprised if we're looking at March and April the same way we're looking at February right now. You know, just not very lackluster, and then come May with the DC books, hey, it's really picked up.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people are going to wait for some of these trades coming out, you know, or they're late on Animal Man, and they're like, ooh, maybe I'll pick this up and trade, you know, and they do a little reorder your stuff. You know, I think these books are going to do pretty well.
It will be.
And I think DC is going to carry the load, you know.
Well, and the whole concept of when these trades come out, does that cause some reorder activity on some of the issues 7 and 8s and stuff that's currently coming out or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, DC took a huge, huge risk with that. And, you know, so far I think it's been, you know, certainly not, you know, completely perfect or anything, but it's been a huge payoff and, you know, worth the anxiety I'm sure they had to go through at various points of was it going to work or not. You know, it was a big risk and worth doing, and Marvel's not taking big risks right now, and they're not doing, you know, all that great. I mean, they're not doing poorly. They're not going to close their doors or anything. But in comparison, they're certainly the second ran, you know, with, yeah, they've got the aggregate sales, but part of that is just how much stuff they're pumping out.
Mm-hmm.
People are not talking about Marvel on the upswing as they are for DC. And I would really like to see over the course of the year, Marvel get back in the game, compete heavily with DC, and DC rise to that challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Frankly, some of these others as well, IDW. You know, I would like to get to where no publisher has over a 30-35% share on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the comic side, maybe even on the trade side. Let's get some serious competition going. Let's make sure there's stuff out here for everybody and that it's clear where are good jumping on points. Granted, every issue and every volume of trade and hardcover should be, but it's not. To where we can be really, as an industry, taking advantage of the digital market and getting a lot of people who want to get into comics, making it just so simple for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're not there yet.
No. And we didn't even talk about how digital is going to affect it. Because a lot of people aren't going to be buying trades. They're going to be buying digital.
But, you know, we've seen other cases where they've released stuff digitally and that helped the print sales.
Yeah, sure.
I think we're not going to know until, you know, the numbers for May, June, and or July come out to even get a real kind of a sense. I mean, May will give us some initial indications of, is this cause for alarm? Have they just taken the foundation out from under the collected edition sales or not? And I doubt they have, but who knows? You know, it's going to be very telling the next couple of months.
Well, I just wonder if, you know, one of these days, the big four, or, you know, the big four plus IDW, if you want to call it, and, you know, they do a free comic book day, and they just give away a brand new original, whether it be Superman or Star Trek or Spider-Man comic book for a free comic book day right off their website, you know?
Yeah.
That would be great. Just come here, download it for free, and who cares? Share it around the world. Who cares what you do with it? You know, throw it up in the Pirate Bay, you know, do whatever you want with it. We don't even care. You know, it's one of those things. Just get it out to everybody. It's like a free song on iTunes. You know, just give it away for free.
There's something to be said for taking a good on-ramp issue and doing that and just saturating the internet with that, to where it's like, how can you not know Batman Earth 1 or the first 20 pages or, you know, whatever are out and available?
Right, and then on the front page or strewn about within that issue, like, hey, if you like this book, go to this website, you know, and here's a 50% off for the first two issues or the next two issues you buy or something like that, you know?
Well, but the thing is, they need to have good content and an effective cross-sell. And the effective cross-sell I have not been seeing.
No.
You know, I've been reading in some stuff where, hey, you know, check this out in next week's issue of, you know, whichever title or whatever. That's not a cross-sell. Mm-hmm. That's almost annoying. You know, when Midnighter and Apollo and Stormwatch are reminiscing or, you know, about one of their first, you know, solo missions or whatever that happens next week or whatever, the following week in Grifter, how can I remember that? You haven't shipped it yet.
Right, exactly.
You know, that just doesn't work for me. They need to figure out a better way to entice readers to other stuff without forcing them into it with a storyline that continues, a crossover, or some kind of pause for, I don't say a commercial break, but you know what I mean.
Can I ask you something a little off topic on Stormwatch?
Sure.
How is that title doing?
In terms of sales?
Yeah, is that one that should be canceled, but they just refuse to? I mean, it seems like they would want to keep that title. I mean, they want to get rid of the Wildstorm universe as a whole. You know, I mean, like, are they canceling Grifter? Or I imagine.
Well, the ones that have been canceled are Blackhawks, Men of War, Mr. Terrific, Static Shock, OMAC, and Hawk and Dove.
Okay, Static, they're going to fold into one of Teen Titans, I think.
Yeah. Mr. Terrific is getting kind of folded into the Earth 2 stuff. Men of War is getting replaced with G.I. Combat.
Yeah.
Blackhawks will hopefully never be seen again.
Right.
OMAC, I don't know what that
is. OMAC is getting folded into Justice League International.
Oh, that's too bad. That title has not been working for me. I'm not a fan of that
style.
No,
you know what? They tried to... The Superman met up with them last week, and it's like, you know, enough. You know? Yeah.
Hawk and Dove, I don't know what the plan is for that.
Nah, I don't care. Green Arrow? Green Arrow's around, right?
That one's sticking around. The those are
gone.
Starting with Blackhawks up the list were the six of the seven lowest selling books.
Yeah.
With issue six. The next one, I mean, Captain Atom was between OMAC and Hawk and Dove. So the fact it stuck around is surprising.
Yeah.
But I would expect the order of which ones at this point with issue six would get knocked off would be Captain Atom, Voodoo, Blue Beetle, Grifter, Eye Vampire, Resurrection Man, Fury of Firestorm, Legion Lost, DC Universe Presents.
That's changing, though. That was what? Dead Man, now it's Challengers.
And the sixth issue had the Challengers.
Yeah.
And it was down by, you know, about 8% from the previous.
And people are like, who are they?
Well, it's funny because Bob and I talked about this. The miniseries is for the new 52-related titles not doing that well.
Yeah, it's not.
You know, Huntress was the best-selling of the bunch.
Yeah, oh, really?
And it was around, I think, 22,000. Let me unfilter a few items and put them back on this list so I can see them. Yeah, Huntress, 22,256.
Huh.
You know, so most of them sold below that DC Universe Presents, which is essentially a series of miniseries disguised as an ongoing series.
Exactly.
You know, but The Ray, which I loved, I thought was great.
I like The Ray.
10,858 units.
Four issues. Done.
My Greatest Adventure, 6,867 units. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed all three of those stories. The Robot Man, The Garbage Man, and Tanga.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not going to see more of that. So I think...
Well, it seems to me Legion Lost could be like a 12-issue maxi series almost. You know, it's like, I don't really think they need two Legion series. The concept is interesting, though, that there are Legionnaires in our time.
Which they've done...
Numerous times.
Oh, yeah. Many, many times.
Yeah.
Anything that's under 20,000, I think, is in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what their expectations are within DC. I would think after doing a full reboot, the marketing push and all that stuff, that they would be hoping for more than that on most titles. I like how they've been giving stuff a fair shake. You know, these, even the ones that got canceled had, you know, 5-6 issues out before they announced, yeah, you know, we're going to pull the plug on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it just started and it's suddenly gone. But certainly there are a couple of these others. Again, Captain Atom and a few others, I think, are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stormwatch, which is the one you had been asking about,
mm-hmm.
is selling 26,073 estimated units as of issue 6. So I think that's doing all right.
Yeah.
I do find it interesting that, again, the 22,256 for Huntress, add in even the 11,600 for Mr. Terrific, you know, that's under 34,000 units between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially what's kicking off the Earth 2 and the World's Finest stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm hesitantly excited about. Cautiously optimistic, I think. I was more optimistic when it was just Earth 2, but now that I'm seeing a lot of the stuff and it's not the classic Earth 2,
yeah,
that's cooling my enthusiasm. It could still be really, really good. The art team of George Perez alternating with Kevin McGuire, how can you go wrong with that?
Yeah.
And that's written by Paul Levitz. It's like, come on, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it may not be the Earth 2
I'm familiar
with.
They can't screw
this
one up, can they?
Oh, come on. The Ray is going to be under 10,000 units probably with that fourth issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fun series and easy entry.
I haven't read issue 4 yet, though.
My point is, you've got a lot of good things that are selling pretty poor at the bottom of the list.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're smart at DC, what they do is they've got another set of a couple of titles. And they could just say, okay, we're going to give these till, I don't know, issue 12 or whatever, and then that's it. Let's put in the next round.
Yeah.
You know? Something to where we get a manageable number of new titles. It's far enough apart that, you know, and I would do, again, we've talked about this. I've talked about it with Bob. I would do about 4 months between to where I could pitch, here's the wave two of stuff, have those first issues still out, get out, before I'm pitching a wave three and stealing the thunder on those sales.
I know what I wanted to ask you. How is The Shade doing?
The Shade is doing 16,253 units.
Yeah, that's
five.
A series that, oh, man. You wish it would be doing better, but it just isn't.
Well, and the question is, why not?
Because there's no Jack Knight.
I think that's part of it, but I think part of it also is it's a tough market out there.
Yeah.
They did an okay job pitching it, but it's pitched on nostalgia. If you liked that old Starman series,
mm-hmm.
Well, what about today's readers? I mean, if you're saying buy this because you used to like this other thing, you've automatically said everybody else don't bother.
You're right, exactly.
And that's bad.
And by the way, the character that you like isn't in it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be... I read the first two issues, then I dropped it. I'm like, you know what? DC said they're going to commit to all 12 issues or 10 issues or whatever it is.
12.
12. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy the hardcover when it comes out, and it's going to sit right next to my other Starman omnibus books. You know, hopefully the cover art will match up, and it'll be a nice set of 7 volumes or something, you know? And who knows, maybe Jack will make a cameo in issue 12 or something. That would be nice. But, you know, if it doesn't, it doesn't, kind of thing.
If I were at DC or even at Marvel, I would be very hesitant to give an issue count for any limited series over, say, 6 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's pretty far down the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again...
No, it's a big commitment, you know.
Yeah. You know, that My Greatest Adventure series, it started with sales... what were those initial sales?
Just look at the 12 over at Marvel. Oh, my God.
Well, the 12 is a special case because of the 4 years hiatus.
Yeah.
But, I mean, My Greatest Adventure started at over 17,000, and it's now below 7,000. So, you know, those things happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, DC took the top 10 slots second month in a row. So when this stuff starts hitting the collected edition side... You know, they may do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Will they take all the top slots on the collected side? Don't know. It certainly seems possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a very interesting time we live in. There's a lot of cultural acceptance for comics, a lot of movie popularity and TV show popularity based on comic book properties. Comic sales over at DC are doing pretty good. Yet, you look at the Marvel sales, you look at indie sales, you look at the trade sales and stuff, and there's a lot of areas that are still kind of weak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the print side of things needs to kind of figure itself out and turn itself around soon before it becomes seen as not really viable and not worth investing in. You know, I think we're getting to the point where if some of these publishers were to say, hey, we're just going digital, that's viable for them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's a good idea or not, not so sure. But certainly, you know, digital is here. I don't know to what extent, you know, or how long it would be before you consider it mainstream or something. But, you know, it's a very different market than I think we found ourselves in just as recently as a year or two back. So.
Mm-hmm. Time will tell.
Yep. Definitely will. So what do you got coming up on your show?
Well, if I ever do a show, I think I'm going to be talking a lot about the IDW Artists Edition. I do not own any, unlike you.
Seriously?
No, I don't own any. No.
That surprises me.
Well, yeah, they're expensive, man.
That's true. And up until this one, I didn't own any either, so I shouldn't, you know.
Well, when they started coming out, I'm like, I really don't want one. And then, you know, I saw a few in the store, and I'm like, boy, these are pretty. Because, I mean, I like the collected editions, and it's not really a collected edition. It's more like artist prints is what they are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, I mean, I like the full story. I like the color. I like the word balloons. I like everything just nice and pretty, just like a good book. And but then, you know, when I heard that, and I was very interested in getting Wally Wood and Will Eisner. If I was going to get any, because I like the classic stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, now hold off. And then a few weeks ago when they said they're going to do the Mezzichelli Daredevil, I'm like, oh, I looked at the wallet. I'm like, all right, the kids may not have to eat any lunches this week because I've got to get this book. So I think, you know, I plunked down for it. And, you know, we'll see. I think I'm going to like it a lot. You know, I mean, I've got Born Again in, three different, no, I don't have the originals. I've got the hardcover, I got the trade paperback, and I got the omnibus. So, you know, three different, I'll have it in four different forms now.
I
might as well go out and get the originals on eBay or something.
Yeah, I have the originals because I had started getting Daredevil off the rack a couple of months prior.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are just some nice additions.
Yeah, yeah. But I know I'm tweeting a lot more on DGTL Comics. It's my little Twitter for digital comics. So if you want any news, I mean, I don't do much commentary. There's no website. It's if I see anything digital in the way of comic books or digital comic books or iPad comic books or Comixology or whatever, I tweet it out. So if you want the latest news, I mean, that's it. That's all I do. I don't even write my own original content on that Twitter feed. It's just I push links for digital comic book news.
Makes sense.
It works. It's fun, you know.
Cool.
What do you got coming up on your show?
Let's see. We got the weekly comic spotlight. The next one's going to have, Saucer Country from DC Vertigo.
Oh, nice.
Ultimate Comics X-Men from the Marvel Ultimate line, and then The Secret History of D.B. Cooper and Saga. Bob's just gone to WonderCon, so he's going to do a wrap-up on that. I think we got a publisher spotlight potentially planned. I think that'll be on Valiant, because, of course, that's becoming topical now that it's coming back. I'm trying to think what else we've got. We've got one or two other things in the works.
Did you read the D.B. Cooper book?
Not yet. It's sitting on my shelf waiting to be read.
Yeah, I've heard pretty good things about that, so...
I usually, we're recording this on Monday night. I usually wait until Thursday or Friday to read the books I'm going to review.
Mm-hmm.
Just to where everything else I read doesn't like crowd that out of my tiny little brain.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't remember some of that stuff sometimes.
Right, right.
It doesn't matter how good it is. It's just, you know, for me, it's a read, to enjoy, not read for trivia or to memorize. Yeah, it's just the way my brain works on that.
Oh, I remember what I meant to tell you. I will also be doing a podcast. I was going to write an article. I might do both. I plowed through Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., the first three Masterworks.
Wow.
And I also read the Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D. Work.
It was the six-issue prestige format?
The six-issue, yeah. Boy, was that some great stuff. And yeah. I have to say, the Jim Steranko stuff of the original Nick Fury, that blows everything out of the water. That's some of the greatest material I've ever read in comic book form, and it still holds up today.
Have you been reading Battle Scars?
I'm not reading. No, I'm not.
You might want to pick that up and trade.
Yeah?
Yeah. Nick Fury's in it.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Okay. I will do that. I haven't read Secret Warriors either.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. So, cool.
Cool, man. All right.
Anything else? Does that do it?
That'll do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.